Hi, this is Nigel Glockler from Saxon. You're listening to Radio Lublin. Yo! Radio Lublin,
lubię to. Hello, you're listening to Polish Radio Lublin, and my guest is legendary drummer of Saxon, Nigel Glockler. Hi, Nigel. First of all, I wanted to ask you, are you still counting? I counted, and it looks like Hellfire and Damnation is Saxon's 27th studio album.
I thought it was the 24th.
Yes, that's correct, but also I counted two cover albums and a re-recording one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, we never think about it. We just get on with it, you know? Like, it's time for another album, and so the writing gets done, and you know, we do it, and then go in the studio and record. So we don't really think, you know. Actually, I mean, you saying that's quite horrific, really.
You know, it was intended that I counted everything, as Saxon is one of a kind. You never had breaks in your activity. You're releasing new music in a very regular way.
No. I mean, we, you know, we sort of run on a kind of schedule, I guess. You know, it's like we do an album, we write an album, record an album, then it gets released, and then we go on tour. You know, and we try and tour everywhere we can, you know, everywhere that wants us to come. So we do that. And then at the end of that thing, we have maybe a little bit of time off. And then it's time for, you know, the record company say, right, it's time for another album. So that's how it works. Yeah.
Even if the schedule seems to be so tight, I think that you still have a lot of fun doing it. Am I right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, it's obviously it's hard work when you're writing and recording, but it is fun. You know, I mean, the touring's fun as well. You know, I personally think if it's not fun, you shouldn't do it. You know, but no, I mean, I loved it. When I was doing the drum parts, it was like, you know, it was great. It was like laughing and, yeah, let's get this one done and bang. And it was great. You know, the vibe on this album was, you know, was great. Really good with everyone. You know, we were all really up for it. And no, it was great. And yeah, it does come across.
Okay, Nigel, let's talk a little bit more about drumming. Apologies, but I want to name you an old school drummer.
That's all right.
But even if you are old school, your drumming style and sound of your kids suggest that you are trying to follow the modern spirit and learn some new techniques.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I'm very fussy about the drum sound, you know, and I love working with Andy Sneap. You know, but we tried to get the drum sounding as you know, from the start, as soon as we set up and play bang bang, because I don't like having samples. I don't like having a lot of samples on the kit. I want them to be natural. I think nowadays with a lot of things there's too many samples. I think from a drum sound, I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but it's like you get a lot of bands coming out and the drums all sound the same. You know, it literally all sounds the same. And it's just like, oh, they must be using that sample or they're using these samples because they, you know. But no, I'm very fussy about it. But again, it's like something else. I mean, I never stop learning. You know, I'm always trying to push myself to learn new things all the time. So I listen to a lot of drummers. You know, and I might sort of hear something, go, oh, that's nice. How does that go, I wonder, you know? So I just want to improve all the time.
Yeah, it sounds, especially when you're listening to the Saxon's albums one by one, release by release, year by year. Everything is in the right place. The drum play is very dynamic and flowing with the song.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, for me as well, I think a lot of things comes down to, I think the most important thing is to play for the song. That's the most important thing. You know, I hear some players and they just go in and they just play a drum solo over, you know, oh, I've got to put this lick in, I've got to put this fill in and do that. Play for the song, you know, and try. I mean, again, another really important thing is the groove. the groove of the song is the most important thing, because the drums are the bedrock. You know, if the drums sound crap, then what goes on top is just it's not going to improve anything, really. You know, you have to have that bedrock with the drums and the bass to get that groove. And when we're recording or when we're rehearsing, you know, for new songs, we often, I always play to a click track in the studio. Always. Because I want to get the tempo right. I want to get the groove right. It was something I learned before I joined Saxon, when I was in Toyo before Saxon. I had to play with a lot of sequences. So you had to play with a click track, because there's nothing worse than drums being slightly out of time with a sequencer. It sounds awful, you know. So I sort of learned this. And what we tend to do is when we're sort of getting to the point of recording, we'll play through each song and go, let's get the groove right. No, that maybe we could speed it up a little bit and it sounds better, or slow it down a little bit. So we're constantly thinking of that. So I think all these things, you know, make the final equation, sort of thing.
Hellfire and Damnation has been available for a week, so it gained some feedback from journalists and fans. Looks like the overall feedback is quite positive now.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen every single review in every single fanzine or magazine, but generally, you know, the main ones have been great. So, we're very pleased. I mean, it's been charting all over the place. So, we're very happy about it.
You know, some time ago, I saw an interesting discussion on the internet where the main topic asked, do we really need a new Saxon album? Of course, a lot of Orthodox fans said that who cares about the new Saxon music when the classic albums like Wheels of Steel or Denim and Leather seems to be enough. Tell me, as Saxon delivers new music pretty regularly, it is because of your need or of doing something new, or more likely to caress your fans?
It's funny. I mean, there are a lot of, you know, there are some people that still prefer the original albums. All I say to them is, listen to some of the new stuff and you might like it. You know, just listen to some new stuff and come along to the concerts, you know, and it might surprise you, you know. But no, for us, it's always fun. We love writing, you know, composing songs and stuff and playing new stuff. You know, obviously, when we go on tour, you know, depending on what country we're playing in, sometimes the set list has to change, because there are certain songs that are very popular in some countries, not so popular in others. So we're constantly changing certain sections. But I mean, when we go out, I know you haven't asked this question as such, but when we go out on tour, obviously the main thing is to promote the new album. That's why bands go on tour, really, you know, to promote the latest thing. I mean, otherwise, I think if you just concentrate on, say, your first four albums, you almost become a tribute band, you know. But no, we love writing and composing and doing new albums. So, hey, and as long as people want to hear that, we'll keep doing it.
By the way, sorry if I'm too direct, but I feel that the great work on the new Saxon albums was done by your new guitarist, Brian Tatler, formerly known from Diamond Head. The well-known veteran of heavy metal guitar brings a lot of fresh air into your music.
Yeah, I mean, Brian coming in has any new member of a band is like fresh blood. Yeah. You know, any new member, it's natural, you know. But actually on this album, I mean, a lot of the guitar playing, in fact, most of the guitar playing is actually Doug. Right. So he's done a phenomenal job, because he's had to step up after Paul left. Right. So Doug stepped up and he's done a great job. And Brian's just slotted in perfectly, you know. So the two guitarists are like, you know, they're playing their butts off, basically. You know, they're great, both of them.
You know what? When you announced that your new guitarist would be Brian, I had a bittersweet feeling. The guy from Diamond Head, it looked like some kind of new wave of British heavy metal tribute. But after listening to Hellfire and Damnation, I understood what was behind that trick.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, again, as I said, you know, he did slot in perfectly. I mean, it was not last year, it was the year before, I think, because Diamond Head had played, you know, a lot of shows supporting us. So we knew Brian anyway, right? So there was a time, not last year, I think it was the year before, during, I think it was festival season or something. I think Paul got COVID or flu or something. So he wasn't, you know, it was a, we had a couple of festivals, I think, coming up, and we weren't sure if he was going to be recovered from COVID to be able to play them. So we asked Brian to learn all the set, right? So he learned all the set in case Paul couldn't do the gigs. So Brian was almost ready anyway, you know? So he learned everything, but then Paul came and did the gigs. So, but I mean, from the point of view of Brian, I mean, we wanted someone English, obviously. We wanted someone of our era, played our type of music, and he was obvious. I mean, yeah, sure, we could have gone for like a 20-year-old shredder, but that wouldn't have been right. The playing would have been wrong. You know, you can't have someone playing 5,000 notes a second. You know, like, look at me, look at me. That's not what we're about, you know. So he was perfect, and he was, you know, the first choice. Boom, we played with him. Great. Why look for anyone else?
Yeah, all clear now. Some time ago, I was reading the interview with Biff Byford in Polish newspaper, where the journalist asked him to type the three Saxon albums which he would recommend for someone who is just starting to listen to your band. Biff pointed at Denim and Leather, Metalhead, and the new one. What would be your choices?
Oh,
Hard
well, I
question, I don't
mean,
know.
yeah, the latest album, yeah. I think Sacrifice. And because it was a special album for me, it wasn't my first album because the first album was live, but my first studio album with Saxon, Power and the Glory.
Yeah.
So those three for me.
Okay, it's quite interesting answer. Regarding both these answers, Hellfire and Damnation is the album which mixes the classic 80s Saxon style with modern, heavier and darker atmosphere, which was characteristic for later releases. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I think the past, I mean, Carpe Diem was getting there to the same sort of thing. I mean, I still love Carpe Diem as an album. I think, you know, I think we've got a lot more on this album. I think there's a lot more mid-tempo songs rather than, I think maybe a couple of albums in the past had too many fast songs on them. You know, I mean, someone accused us at one point of being a bit Euro metal. You know, which is a, but you know, I'd like to meet them, but you know, maybe this one has got a lot more mid-tempo stuff on it, you know, more groove stuff. It's just how the writing goes. I mean, what happens? People put in bits and send them to Biff or whatever. He may find a certain groove or riff makes him think about a certain subject for a song lyrically, or he could have a lyric already written or an idea for a lyric, and then he suddenly hears something and goes, "Oh, that would fit with that." There's no sort of set thing, but I understand, you know. It's just it just happens this album's got a lo load more mid-tempo stuff rather than a lot of the fast double bass drum. I mean, there is Fire and Steel's fast, you know. We have an English expression that it's so fast that the last one at the end makes the tee. We like playing some fast songs, you know. It's great, you know.
Okay, Nigel, let's talk a little bit about the lyrics. The lyric side of the song was always really important for Saxon music. On Hellfire and Damnation, you get some amazing stories from mankind history. I wonder which one is your favorite?
Well, my favorite track on the new album's Madame Guillotine. That's my favorite one. And what I like about it, and I say this, you know, in other interviews, I think it's one of Biff's finest lyrics, actually. And I like the fact that he's not an outsider. He's not from the outside talking about singing about the guillotine. he is Madame Guillotine. So it's Madame Guillotine singing to you, saying, "Welcome, come here, I'm going to cut your head off," you know? That's what I like about it. I love it. It's great. And the groove's great on it, you know? I think that's going to be a great one live. And Andy Sneap did a great job, because when you listen to it, there's just before the singing starts, there's the sound of the guillotine. Yeah. He found that, and I was like, yes! He found a sample of it.
Yeah, that's a great part of his track. I bet that without that fragment, this song wouldn't be the same.
I like the stop. It's the stop. You don't know what the groove's going to be. You know, you've got the start, gang, 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 at the beginning, but it could be boom, bap, boom, bap, boom, bap. But it just suddenly slams into this. I think that's going to be a favorite.
In another song, you are getting back to a little town called Roswell, which became famous in 1947 when, probably, an alien spaceship crashed there. So, in your opinion, there's something in Roswell?
You know, I mean, will we ever know the real truth? But, I mean, you have to look at it from the point of view, you know, now it's all coming out, you know, with these videos that the US Air Force have been released, that their jets have seen, and, you know, their warships have been buzzed by these lights. And, you know, I mean, who knows? There's obviously something there. I mean, you've got to look at it. There's like Area 51, I think, that there was the rumor years ago that they had an alien spacecraft in there or something. I mean, maybe that'll be the next thing that comes out. You know, there's obviously something now. I mean, I live in Texas, and there's an area, I think it's Texas, there's an area sort of kind of out in the sort of deserty thing. I can't remember the name of them, but there's a place where you see all these floating lights, and no one knows what they are. You Google it, you'll look it up. I can't remember what it's called. But I'm determined to go down there and have a look at them. Apparently you see them sometimes at night, these sort of floating lights. And, you know, who knows? It'll come out sometime. I mean, you know, we can't be the only beings in this huge universe.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. It's really interesting what we will get to know in the near future. By the way, we are living in such an interesting times, also for the music business. From one hand, the streaming rules. On the other hand, we have a renaissance of vinyl. How do you find yourself in that? Streaming is something like a necessary evil, or it's more like the sign of the times?
Yeah, I think the streaming thing's great, I think, from the point of view that, you know, it gets people to listen to new stuff, you know? I mean, the only bone of contention about streaming is that there's not a lot of income in it for the bands at the moment, but it's being changed, which I think is fair enough, because, you know, we have to earn a living, right? You know, we have to live. It's our job.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot of people really into vinyl, which is great. I think maybe cassettes will come back next. Who knows? You know, I don't know. I mean, anything that lets people listen to music, I think it's great. You know, personally, I'm a CD man, because I tend to play music when I'm in the car. Right. So I like to, you know, so that's like, for instance, if I buy a new CD, I like to put it on in the car when I'm driving or whatever. And listen to it, and that's how I sort of get into it. At home, I sort of don't tend to sort of sit down and listen to music. I put music on while I might be doing something else. You know, nothing sort of drastic. Just eating, maybe, or whatever. That's when I put music and listen to stuff. You know, I'm not the sort of person that can sort of. But I used to be when I was younger, when, you know, with the original vinyl, you know, I bought a new Yes album, I'd sit down and sit on the sofa and put it on and, you know, listen to it, read the cover, you know, everything about it. But nowadays it's like with vinyl, I mean, I can't be bothered to get up and turn it over. Just put the thing on, you know, or hold on, I want to listen to track 8, bang, and just press a button and off it goes, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the whole thing's healthy. I think anything that'll let people listen to music is great. But people that do all the streaming, they have to realize, you know, it's a bit unfair to bands because, you know, it's our job and we have to earn a living. I mean, I totally agreed with, you know, years ago when there was, what was it called? Napster thing, when Lars went against Napster and stuff. And I totally agree with Lars about it because, you know, I know a lot of people go, you can't do that. Why shouldn't we listen to it? You earn lots of money and blah, blah, blah. But it's his job. So he came up with a great analysis of it. So he said, if my memory serves me well, he said something like, okay, so you've downloaded my music for free. So I want my car service, do it for free. And the person would go, no, I can't do that. It's my living. Well, you've downloaded my music, which is my living. So yeah, I agree with him. You know, I'm sorry, I agree with him.
Yeah.
But no, I think any form of listening to music, though, like, you know, like the streaming or whatever, I think anything, you know, if people don't want the, I mean, it makes it a lot easier because, you know, CDs, albums take a lot of space up in your home.
Nigel, I'm calling you from Lublin, from Poland. It's a place which should be important in Saxon's history, as right in that city, back in 1986, you played your very first show behind the Iron Curtain, exactly on 11th of April.
Wow!
Do you have some memories from that time?
I remember a lot of the, you know, the gigs in Poland were like, I remember there were a lot of soldiers there in the audience, and I just remember them throwing their hats up in the air. They were enjoying it, and that's a memory I'll always have. Another one, not a Polish thing, but we were in on that same tour, we went to Hungary, and we were Hungary, and that we were playing. We were while the crew were setting everything, there were some tennis courts outside. So we were playing tennis, right, while we were waiting for the crew to set everything up. Some of us were playing tennis. And then we found out we weren't that far from, I think, from the Russian border or something. And then we found out Chernobyl had gone up. And we weren't that long. And so I had to go back because, you know, there was some worry. I had to go back. When I went back to England, and I was living in Brighton, I had to go to the hospital to have a Geiger counter put over me.
Yeah, that's an amazing history. The dates got folded in a really unfortunate way. By the way, I heard that during your first visit in Poland, there were a lot of fans which were tried to get into the venue. Do you have problems with fans which they waited for you outside the hotel or something like that?
Yeah, great. We still get it now. It was crazy. It was like, you know, we played, well, I can't remember where the gig was, but I remember it was Warsaw, I think. Yeah, it was Warsaw. And we were outside. We were literally outside the gig, off the tour bus, for about 45 minutes signing things before we even got into the gig. which was fantastic. It's great. You know, love it. You know, we don't have a problem doing that. It's great. You know, the main thing I always say to everyone is that, you know, we really appreciate the fans, and it's the fans that put us where we are. It is true. Without them, we'd be nothing. So, sure, people outside, yeah, we'll sign it. Bang. No problem. But, yeah, I always remember that. I mean, that last tour was just – Warsaw was just mad. It was like – and then people were going away and coming back with more stuff, you know.
It's because you recorded so many studio albums, mate.
I know. The people bring the vinyl, then all the CDs. It's like, oh my God, my hand's going to fall off, you know.
Well, prepare your hands for Krakow then.
Really looking forward to that. Should be great. Oh, it'll be good to meet you in person then. Maybe we can have a beer together.
Oh, Manu, we have a big pleasure.
Yeah, that'd be great. And before I go, I want to give a shout out to two Polish bands I love. Riverside and Tides from Nebula. I love them. I've got all of Tides and all of Riverside's albums. I love them. I mean, I'm good friends with Michael and Piotr from Riverside. So, oh yeah, cool. We text each other all the time to see what's happening. So,
Oh, really? Say hello to them from me.
Okay, yeah, I will do. All right, Martin, brilliant. Okay, see you soon. Okay, bye.